I'd like you to turn back to the book of Ruth. Made a couple of strategic errors this month. I figured 4 chapters, 4 sermons. That was wrong. I'd like you to turn to Ruth chapter 2. Made a bunch of other mistakes this month too, but as we've been looking at the book of Ruth, as I've been studying the book of Ruth, the concept of loyal love is one of the main themes of the book. Now, this word, loyal love, the word that's translated, it's translated a number of different ways in the Old Testament. One is just simply love. Another is kindness. And I believe in the regular King James Version, that word is oftentimes translated loving kindness. But the word really doesn't have a lot to do with emotion. The word has everything to do with what we would call loyalty. We have a hard time with the concept of love. I have a hard time with it because of the English word. I love my wife dearly, and I love spaghetti greatly. It's the same word. You know the story there. It's a completely different concept. But this word talks about the kind of love that God displays. In chapter 1 and verse 8, and in chapter 2 verse 20, the word is used to talk about God's love for His people. But the writer also uses the word to describe the love that Ruth showed to Boaz in chapter 3 and verse 10. The word itself is only used 3 times in the book. But the reader of the book is left with the sense that that concept of loyal love transcends the entire story. It's the love that Boaz displays not only to Ruth, but also to Naomi, and also to the dead people in the book, the 3 men who died. Loyal love is the quality of love that people, that you and I, are fully capable of displaying. It's nothing magic. It's not this concept that we sometimes get in the New Testament from that word agape, that we can't do that. No, that's not the case at all with this word. Not only are God's people to be fully capable of doing it, we are. But we are to do it. The idea there is this is a word that should describe not only what we're capable of doing, but what we should be doing. The sad part is, I guess we would probably readily admit, we don't show loyal love. Not to the degree that we should. My impression as I read the book is that the Lord is looking for this type of love from His people, not so much toward Him, but toward one another. The writer implies, I think, to the original readers, and this is something I haven't picked up on enough in this series, but I believe the writer is implying that King David is the one who shows this kind of love to his people. I don't know when this book was written. It was written sometime either just before, during, or after the reign of David. We know that because at the end of the book, we see David mentioned as the great-great-grandson of Boaz and Ruth. And so some have postulated that the book was written in order to give legitimacy to the throne of David, maybe just before he came into power when he was being chased by Saul. Others have said it was written after the reign of David to look back at this great king who had a wonderful beginning. I tend to think as I read the book that it may have been written during the time just after Absalom's rebellion, when life under David really, really changed. His good-looking son with the beautiful hair like mine, what kind of ascended, remember, and he took charge of the kingdom, but he did it in a gross and disgusting way. And David, in humility and defeat, marched out of town. And everybody saw him marching out of town as his son took over. As a matter of fact, it was that one fellow walking up on the hill next to him, cursing him, teasing him as he left. And the great king left town, left Jerusalem in unbelievable humiliation. But he came back. But things were never the same after he came back. And my guess is that under the inspiration of the Spirit of God, somebody wrote this book in order to show that, no, David should have always been king. And David treated you folks with loving kindness. And you went after looks and hair. And you ignored loving kindness. I think that's when the book was written. And if you look at it in that light, you see the author is saying, this is what David is like. And you and I on this side of the BCAD timeline, we look at this and we say, this is exactly what Jesus Christ does to us. It's a loyal love. It's a love that's not at all dependent on emotion, but that's fully dependent on loyalty. My question then for you today has to do with that same kind of love. And the question is, are you characterized by loyal love in your dealings with one another? Whether it's here at the assembly or at home, are you characterized by loyal love? I guess that's probably an unfair question if I don't first say what loyal love looks like. And I think as we go into chapter 2 in the book of Ruth, what we see here is what loyal love looked like with Boaz and with Ruth. And actually, as we go through this, we'll see what loyal love should look like in the 21st century. And then I guess we can ask the question, okay, is that what you look like? Is that what I look like? Loyal love, first of all, in verses 1 through 3 of chapter 2, produces duties that are performed responsibly. Duties performed responsibly. It's one thing to have duties, and it's another thing to fulfill those duties. But loyal love causes us to perform our duties responsibly. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. You've got to appreciate how the author is doing this. We just got Naomi home, and remember last week she was pretty ticked off when she got back. She was classic bitterness. We not only know people who are bitter, but we sometimes are people who are bitter. I mentioned last week, sometimes I kind of like being bitter. It feels pretty good. I don't know if you guys ever experienced that, but you wake up sometimes just ticked off for no reason. And then you kind of have this, have this conversation with myself. I kind of say, self, this feels pretty good. Because, you see, I'm a little bit bitter. When one of my goofy kids comes downstairs and does something stupid, I can kind of climb all over them, and I'm justified in doing it. I don't know if you guys do that. I do. Not that often. Not really. And she was pretty bitter, we remember. And the author stops talking about her. And then he says, there was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. One verse, and then if you look at verse 2, it's back to the story. So the author has pulled this little parenthetical statement in again and said, okay, I'm going to introduce this guy, but I'm not going to tell you very much about him. We'll get back to him. Let's go back to the story. Ruth and Naomi have come back. And they showed up in town, and you remember what happened. It was, hey, Naomi's back. Don't be calling me Naomi. That means pleasant. Wrong name. Look what God has done to me. Why didn't he just kill me? He did all of this to me. You remember me as rich and powerful and influential. And I left here with my entourage. I left full. But God has brought me back yet. No, you didn't leave full. You left because there was a famine. You were starving. That's why you left. But she's reinterpreted history. And she's reinterpreted history to fit her own purposes, as we often do. So Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." And then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. That's where we tie in verse 1. A person displaying loyal love, as we see here with Ruth, will perform their duties responsibly. Now, we're going to see in this passage, in all of chapter 2, that the duties could be important matters of life, such as survival, or they could be more trivial matters of life, such as what looks like inconsequential examples of social intercourse. No, big things are small. But the point is that people operating out of loyal love will perform their duty responsibly. Now, just kind of a little sidebar here, a note on raising children. You don't have to do what I say on raising children, because my kids ain't raised yet. Okay, they're still kind of in the oven. They're still raising. And sometimes, as those of you who know my family and me, that's kind of scary. That's a different sermon. My wife's not here. I can say what I want. My kids aren't here. But a note on raising children. One of the things we have to do as parents is we need to teach our children to perform their duties responsibly. Now, our kids perform their duties. Duty kind of rhymes with Judy around our house. Okay? My wife, for those of you who don't know. And she's kind of this unchanging pillar in a maze of dismay. Okay, she just kind of is there. And she kind of emanates performing duty. Okay, I say that complimentary. Really complimentary. I kind of emanate meandering through life and hoping to come out on the other end somewhere. But not her. So our kids are learning to perform their duties. If not, they face Judy. You see, that's the deal at our house. And I just kind of try not to get involved and whatever. I'm kidding. But do they perform them responsibly? If I threaten them to within an inch of their life if they don't, and they do, is that responsible performance? I don't think so. If I offer them major amounts of money to perform their duty, and they do, is that responsibility? No. They are to perform responsibly. And a person who operates from the sphere of loyal love performs their duties responsibly. That's what Ruth did. Now, we're introduced to Boaz in verse 1. And what's very important here, I think, in this context is, number one, don't allow your financial or your social status to make you feel exempt from the requirements to live responsibly. Now, what am I saying? That's a lot of words. What I'm saying is, I don't care who you are or how much money you have. Before God, you're responsible to perform your duty. Let me give you another. Randy Moss is who? He plays for the Vikings. Very good. I don't like the Vikings because they're in the same division as the Packers, who are 6-1 right now. But Randy Moss, to me, epitomizes, in recent things that have happened, the inability to perform duties responsibly. And I don't know his mind. I don't know his heart. And I'm using him as typical of immature people. He might be very mature. I don't know. But it seems that he thinks, and people like him think, that because of who I am and because of what I have, I don't have to live responsibly. And I'd like to say it's relegated to kids who would be adults who are paid a lot of money. But it seeps down to us as well. The concept that you and I could feel above the law. The idea that because of who we are, we don't have to be as responsible in certain areas as the person next to me. The idea that I don't have to do something because of what I have. Oh, the list could be endless, and I could meddle on that. I don't know where your Achilles heel is. I know where mine is. I know where mine are. I don't know. Do I take a radar detector and put it in my car and say to my kids, this is so I can break the law and not get caught? Because you see, the sin is in getting caught. And this will stop me from getting caught. That list could go on, couldn't it? No, son. It's okay if I drive this fast. I don't have a radar detector like my friend does. I'm just sinning and willing to face the consequences. He's not. I don't know. And those probably are silly, stupid examples. But he was a man of great wealth. The text says, the text introduces him to us. That's probably stating that Boaz was a land-owning aristocrat. He had bucks, and he had influence in the community. He was a man of great wealth. Faithful people in verses 2 and 3, though, we see from Ruth, perform their duties responsibly. She was a responsible person. We've been told that from chapter 1. She is responsible. But what's interesting is in verse 3, her steps were guided by the Lord. The author does a good job of trying to veil the movement of God, but his veiling of God's working is making his God's working even louder than if he told us. He says, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Her steps were guided by the Lord. Now, was it coincidental that she went there? I don't know. My guess in reading this is that when she went out to glean, she probably saw a number of fields. And my guess is she saw a number of fields where there were no gleaners. And so the undiscerning person would have said, oh, there's no gleaners there, let me go there. But no, she didn't. She saw the field, as we read, where there was a whole bunch of gleaners. And in her mind, she said, if there's that many people gleaning there, there's probably a generous owner. And she went to that field. It's kind of like if you want to get something done, and this is unfair of me to say, at Belmar Chapel at Fifth Avenue, okay, if I moved in here next week and there was something that had to get done, I'm not going to look to someone who isn't doing anything and say, oh, they probably have all kinds of time. Let me ask them to do it. No, I'm going to find the busiest person here and say, could you do this one extra thing? You know why? Because they're going to get it done. And I know they're going to get it done because they're getting all this other stuff done. I don't know if that's true here. It's true at our chapel. You go to the people who are the busiest and give them something else because it's going to get done. She went to the most crowded field, I would guess, because she knew that the owner was generous. That's why everybody else was fair.
She was led of the Lord.
Application number one for today's passage is that you can be confident of the Lord's leading as you perform your duties responsibly. Now, we get all bent out of shape over missing what God might have for us. We have this impression that God hides things under rocks or puts them around the corner and says, if you walk very quietly and very carefully, you will find my will. And we even get to the point of praying, Lord, I don't see that in the Bible. I see in the Bible that if we live responsibly and don't get all bent out of shape over what does God have for me on Tuesday, want to know what He has for you on Tuesday? Wait till Wednesday. That's how you find that out. Live responsibly. That's what she did. She was responsible to care for her mother-in-law. And that responsibility required much more than praying, Lord, send me food. It required that she went out and found a job. And that's what she did. Be responsible. Loyal love produces duties that are performed responsibly. Second, loyal love produces generosity shown consistently. Generosity. You see that in verses 4 through 13. Generosity shown consistently. Verse 4. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered, and the Lord bless you. And Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, it is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And he said, and she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. And so she came and has continued from this morning until now, though she rested a little bit in the house. Now just to, for those of you who haven't worked as reapers or gleaners, I'll tell you what this was. The reapers were those who were out cutting the grain to get it into the next phase, which we'll, Lord willing, go to next year if I'm coming back. The reapers were cutting the grain. And the next step after that would be taking it to the winnowing floor. Now we have machinery that does that today, and farmers, sure are very thankful for that. But what the reapers did was as they cut the grain, they would try to get most of the grain into the basket, be taken maybe on trailers pulled by oxen. Or, well, that's what they were to do, and they wanted to not only get as much grain as they could in the baskets, but they wanted to get as little of the chaff as they could in the basket. And so in their desire not to have too much chaff in the baskets, they would inevitably throw out some of the grain because they were in a hurry. You got to remember, farmers deal with the weather. And you got to make hay while the weather's good. That's the figure of speech. And so they're fighting to get this in before it rains. But yet, it's not worth picking everything up. Matter of fact, the law commanded, leave some so the poorest of the poor can come by and they can pick that up. Those were called gleaners. They would go after the reapers to pick up what the reapers left behind. And the law was quite clear. Don't strip that grain naked. Leave it for the gleaner, for the poorest of the poor. Boaz did that. What I find interesting about Boaz was that his faith influenced his daily routine. His conversation displayed covenant living. And Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. My boss doesn't say that when he comes to work in the morning. He does use the Lord's name occasionally, but very seldom in this context. His conversation displayed covenant living. Here was a fellow that was not only belonging to God through relationship, but he doesn't strike me as some obnoxious Jesus freak. Because I appreciate their response to him. And the Lord blessed me. His conversation displayed covenant living. His relationship to his workers displayed covenant living. And then his keen awareness provided an opportunity to show loving kindness. He shows up, and in verse 5, he says, "Whose young woman is this? Out of the many gleaners who were there, and many of them being women, because their poor husbands were home watching TV, I don't know. He noticed her." Now, what caused him to notice her? I don't know. And we're not told. Was she this kind of knockout beautiful woman? Probably not with all the dust and the dirt and the sweat that comes from field work. My guess is he didn't say, "Oh, who's the beautiful woman in the high heels over there?" No, that's not my guess. She was a worker. I think what made him notice her was that she wasn't one of the regular women. She was new. What that tells us is that he was aware. He was aware of what went on in his field. I don't want to make too big of a deal out of that, but his keen awareness provided him the opportunity to show loyal love. Do you look for those kinds of opportunities? Back to the kind of implied here of the story, King David. Remember when David ascended to the throne, he had some problems. Things weren't going all that smooth, but he tended to win every battle he was ever in. And he subdued the Philistines around him, and he subdued the other enemies. And when things settled down and he had a chance to take a breath, he said to his servants, "Is there anyone left of the house of Saul that I can show loving kindness to?" Somebody pulled out the records and said, "Jonathan had a son, and I'm not going to say his name, because remember Mephibosheth? Something like that. Remember? He's lame in his feet. And he's still around somewhere." And David said, "Go find him and bring him in." My guess is that when the knock came on his door and he heard David was looking for him, my guess is he thought he was going to die. Because what kings did in those days is they cleaned up the previous monarchy's heir. That didn't mean they didn't retire them somewhere. They killed them. Because they didn't want anyone who would have legitimate claim to the throne after they took over. Remember, David was a completely different line than Saul. Not even related. But what did David do? He brought him in and said, "You're going to eat here the rest of your life. Matter of fact, you had some land. I'm giving all of that back to you, and I'm putting people in charge of running that land, so you can have the income. But you're not going to need the income to eat, because you're going to eat at my table until you die." But David didn't have to do that. But his loyalty to Jonathan, his loyal love to Jonathan, required that he do that. That's exactly what Boaz did. He looked for opportunity to show loyal love. And that, my friends, is what you and I, before God, are responsible to do as well. And my guess is if any of us look for opportunity today, we could find it real fast. An opportunity to show loyal love. His faith influenced his daily routine in verses 8 through 13. His loyal love triggered generosity. Now, let's take a look at his generosity. Number one, it was very extensive in its scope. Chapter 2, verse 8, "And Boaz said to Ruth, 'You will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn. His generosity was extensive in its scope. Second, his generosity was grounded in his spiritual sensitivity. So she fell on her face and she bowed down to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" And Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of her husband, and how you have left your father and mother and the land of your birth and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." And then she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." The generosity is grounded in a spiritual sensitivity. She says to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight?" He gives a reason, but as readers, we know another reason. Because back in chapter 2, verse 1, she prayed that this would happen. And God answered her prayer. "Why have I found favor in your sight?" Because you asked for it. Not so hard to figure out. I've told you this story too many times, but when I worked with a youth group back in Michigan, I knew all the parents of the kids, and I was home there living for a while. And I don't know if any of you guys remember, years ago, there was a commercial on Christian radio that somebody starts to pray the Lord's Prayer, "Our Father." And the person praying this, "Our Father," and all of a sudden hear this loud, deep voice, "What?" And then the person praying says, "Oh, let me start over. Our Father, what?" And the idea there was that God answers prayer, but we want to get through the prayer so we don't listen, type of thing. That was, am I the only one that knows that commercial? Maybe it was a local thing in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It was pretty good, I thought. Anyway, we were talking at our youth group about prayer being answered. And one of the young kids who was a freshman in high school, he's a neat kid. Matter of fact, he's with the Lord right now. He and his wife and newborn baby died all together in a car accident about 15 years. That's a different story. But this young guy, who was a great kid, I asked the group, "What would you do if you prayed for something and God answered it on the spot?" And he said, "I'd die." In other words, he was so accustomed to prayer not being answered that in his mind, to see it answered would be so shocking. I think we're all kind of like that. He says, "Why have I found favor in your sight?" And we want to say, "Because you asked God to send you somewhere where you would, and He answered your prayer." This spiritual sensitivity in which his generosity was grounded, first of all, his generosity was an answer to her prayer. Second, his generosity was in response to her already established reputation for faithfulness. His generosity also is anticipation of him being a significant part in the Lord's provision for Naomi. Boaz has all this stuff coming together, and his answer to it is generosity. And what his generosity did in Ruth was it produced thankfulness and graciousness. This is a really neat conversation that's recorded for us, because in it we see so much in terms of appropriate conversation, in terms of spiritual sensitivity, in terms of just plain old graciousness. So thankful that we're given a glimpse of what goes on here. But he was generous. And application number two from this text, as far as I'm concerned, is simply this. Biblical generosity involves a lot more than merely giving things away. Catch that? Biblical generosity involves a lot more than simply giving things away. You guys like garage sales? I love garage sales. I don't necessarily like to go to them, but I like to have them. Now, a long time ago, they changed the road in front of my house, and you can't park on the street there, so we're done in terms of garage sales, okay? And that's sad, because I think garage sales are really fun. There's kind of that deal, like, how much junk can I give away or get rid of? And how much money can I get in exchange for it? Usually enough to go out to dinner on a good garage sale. But anyway, am I a generous person if at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, with rain coming, I put a sign up that says everything is free? Oh, that's generous. But is it biblical generosity? No. I don't care. I want to get rid of the junk. And if somebody doesn't put it in their trunk, I'm going to have to move it out to the street for the what? For the garbage. There's no generosity. I don't go to bed after a garage sale and say, wow, what a righteous man I am for being so generous. I gave stuff away, but it's not biblical generosity. And all of us have to be careful with that, because it's so easy to think that by giving something away, we are fulfilling a biblical mandate to be generous. No. He could have done this to every woman gleaning in the field. But he didn't. Did it to her. And he did it based on her reputation. Now, if you empty your closet to a believer in need, who has proven responsible in their living, and you not only empty your closet of old clothes you don't wear, but you take out half of what you do wear and give to that responsible Christian in need, you're being biblically generous. Because biblical generosity involves much more than simply giving things away. Loyal love. It produces duties performed responsibly. It produces generosity shown consistently. And finally, in the rest of the chapter, I'm not going to read it all. I think you're probably pretty aware of what goes on there. Loyal love often produces immediate benefits. Immediate benefits. Loyal love blesses the one who loves. Verse 14, and Boaz said to her at mealtime, come here and eat of the bread. And dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. Boy, doesn't that sound good? Pass the vinegar. I'm sure it tastes better than what you and I would think. Is that generous? Here, come on over. You can have my vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her. And she ate, and she was satisfied. And she even kept some back. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. And they bundled up those sheaves, or basketed those sheaves, whatever that means. He says, if she goes by and takes some out of there, let her do it and don't reproach her. He says, well, you know, we kind of worked all day for that. Not a problem. Also, let grain from the bundles fall purposefully. Imagine that. Okay, guys, if you're in front of Ruth, you drop grain. If you're in front of, you know, Sally over there, forget it. He didn't say that, but he implied that. Leave it that she may glean and do not rebuke her. What do you see going on here? I think he's interested in her. I don't know. Remember seventh grade? Does he like her? I think so. Yeah. I think some of that's happening. Loyal love blesses the one who loves. He's enjoying this. Second, loyal love blesses the recipients of that love. She got a lot. You know the story, don't you? She couldn't carry what she left with. Not only did she go home with all this grain, but she went home with the parched grain, the food from the meal that she kept back. Because she says, I'm bringing this home to Naomi. Loyal love blesses the recipients of love. But here is something very important. I'm sorry I'm going late again, but I'm gone next week. Loyal love addresses bitter hearts. That's what ties it into last week. Verse 20. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, this is after she saw, you know, this semi-truck following her home with grain. She said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who has not forsaken his what? Kindness, his loyal love, to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said to her, this man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives. And Ruth the Moabitess, and I'm telling you, the author is not going to ever let us forget she's a Moabitess. By now, I'm saying, hey, forget, she's an honorary Jew at least. No, she's a Moabitess. He also said to me, you shall stay close to my young men until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi, the one who wanted to be called Mara, remember last week? Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, and that people do not meet you in any other field. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Loyal love addresses bitter hearts. Remember I said last week, if you are bitter, chances are you're going to need someone to help get you out of that. Still true. And it was the loyal love of Boaz and Ruth that addressed the bitter heart of Naomi. At the end of chapter 1, there was the barley harvest. The good news was at the beginning of chapter 1, there was famine. We get to the end of chapter 2. There's not only a barley harvest, but just following it, there's a wheat harvest. God has blessed his people. And in the blessing of people, when there's still some standing outside bitter, in the midst of God's great blessing, it takes someone with loyal love to go out and have them come. That's what the prodigal father did to the real prodigal son. The one who stayed outside. Remember? He went out and said, come on. Are you characterized by loyal love? You've got an easy assignment for this week. Find someone to show loyal love to. My guess is you could probably find someone right in your house. Some of you husbands showed loyal love to your wife today. She'd probably be like my friend, I'd die. And if some of you wives showed loyal love to your husband, maybe before 2 o'clock this afternoon, they'd probably be calling me and saying, I owe you money, Bob. Loyal love. You've got to find someone to show that to. And if I really loved you guys, I would have quit 10 minutes ago. Father, we're very, very grateful for examples of real life in your word. And I pray that you would help us to be characterized by loyal love. We're thankful for people like Boaz. We're thankful for people like Ruth. But Father, we're thankful for so many even here in this room whose lives are characterized by faithfulness and loyal love. And I pray that their tribe would increase. In Jesus' name.